Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Because of the United States' exploding prison population, we've become familiar with the image of a prison full of men in orange jumpsuits. And when we think of prisoners, we typically think of hardened young men. But what happens when women, mothers, sisters, daughters, even grandmothers go to prison? 11,000 women are incarcerated in California alone. The state's two major prisons, the Valley State Prison for Women and the Central California Women's Prison, make up the world's largest prisons for women. They're running at about 160% over capacity. Now, the majority of women in prison, 85%, have been convicted of nonviolent crimes. Increased sentencing for drug crimes and the three strikes law have made women the fastest growing population of prisoners nationwide, even worldwide. On today's Your Call, we're having a conversation about women prisoners. How are those inmates different from men? How should the prison system respond to women's unique needs in a system really designed for men? And should women with children be sentenced differently? How does the increased incarceration of families affect communities? Beverly Henry was recently released from prison. She's a longtime member of the California Coalition for Women Prisoners and Justice Now. Both are advocacy groups for women prisoners. She also advocates for HIV-positive prisoners. Beverly was sent to prison in 1998 for selling a $20 bag of heroin to an undercover cop. Because of previous convictions and the three strikes law, she got 15 years. She served 85% of her term and was released just 3 weeks ago. And Beverly Henry joins us from Van Nuys. Hi, Beverly. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for inviting me.
We are also joined by Hafsa Al-Amin. She is project coordinator for the California Coalition for Women Prisoners. And Hafsa joins us from San Francisco. Hi, Hafsa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thank you. And we're joined by Victoria Law. She is author of the book Resistance Behind Bars, The Struggles of Incarcerated Women. She also edits the zine Tenacious, Writings from Women in Prison. And Victoria joins us from New York. Hi, Victoria. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Well, Hafsa Al-Amin, I want to start with you. Help us understand why women are the fastest growing segment of the prison population.
Well, not to belabor any particular points, it's very obvious that in our society, the gender issues that we face on the outside get carried on inside the prison. Most of the prisons, the women prisons, are patrolled or staffed by correctional officers who are overwhelmingly male, which makes absolutely no sense because, again, those gender issues that we deal with on the outside are brought inside. So the women who are in these prisons are definitely more vulnerable, not just to attacks from each other, so to speak, but the correctional officers are notoriously responsible for repeated sexual assaults. They're not treated fairly. It's not much different than it is on the outside. The largest difference is that these women don't have any options. They don't have resources that they can, you know.
There's been a huge spike since the 80s when you look at the number of women in prison. Is that because of the state's tough sentencing laws and three strikes law?
Oh, absolutely. For similar crimes, for instance, if a woman is present during the commission of a crime that her partner, let's assume he's male, is committing for the same crime, she can be charged with maybe twice the time that he gets. Him being the primary offender, he may get, for instance, let's say 20 years on a drug conviction. If he was in the home of his partner, female, and she let him use the phone, she becomes a conspirator. Mm-hmm. And, you know, special circumstances, there's another 10 years maybe added on to her sentencing, while if there were other accomplices, her partner may cut a deal for less time, you know, pointing out someone else, and that doesn't affect her sentence. So he may get, you know, 10, 15 years knocked off of his sentence for speaking about other people, where her sentence may be, you know, sometimes doubled for something that she was not directly responsible for.
Victoria, anything to add to that, to explain why we've seen such a boom over the past two decades?
I would definitely agree with Hafsa in that there's a sentencing of drug laws. There's the fact that women are punished more. There's the fact that they don't have information to trade when they're arrested alongside their male partners or other people that have been doing these actions. And also there's been a chipping away at all of the survival net or the survival, like the social safety nets that the government has put in place since like the civil rights era, which means that the people who are going to prison are at the bottom of the economic ladder, which tends to be women, particularly women of color, particularly single heads of household. And so if they don't have a way to legally support their family, they might look for ways that have been criminalized to be able to do so as well. In the 3 years after welfare, quote-unquote, reform, issued a lifetime ban on people with drug convictions or probation or parole violations, over 96,000 women were subjected to the welfare ban. So that meant that they could no longer get any sort of social safety net or monetary safety net for themselves and their families. So when you look at that and you think, well, what is a woman going to do? Is she going to work at Walmart or McDonald's for minimum wage, which may not pay her rent? Or might she turn to some other option that is not legal, you know, which opens her up to a risk of being arrested and incarcerated? So you also have to like kind of look at the way that some of our social policies have forced people into actions that aren't legal, and then it turns around and incarcerates them.
And you mentioned information trading. Can you explain that?
Basically, if a woman is caught, say, with her male partner because she has let him, say, use the phone in her house to transact a drug deal, or she takes a phone message or she signs for a package and both she and her partner are arrested, she could be charged with conspiracy. And because she doesn't actually have any other information, she can't point out another accomplice. She can't tell, you know, the prosecutor, the police, anything more than John called or, yeah, he was here at 2 o'clock and I signed for a package. That's not information that's going to lessen the charge against her. Mm. So basically, because she doesn't have any more information to give them, there's no reason for them not to go ahead and press a conspiracy charge against her. But there's no legal reason why.
And
I mean, there are plenty of moral reasons why they shouldn't be doing that.
Hafsa, 11,000 women are incarcerated in California. What are most women incarcerated for?
Most in the last 20 years, the war on drugs has primarily been the reason. Prior to the 80s, we saw what, and I'm a person, a woman of color, we saw what we considered a war on the black male. So you have this unprecedented number of black men who were being taken from the communities. And I don't know if you've ever been inside a prison, but it's ridiculous, the number of men of color, and I don't just mean black men, who are incarcerated. These men also represent families. So here these women have no head of household. If they weren't already working, they've got to step up, they've got to work. If they don't have skills or for whatever reason they're not working, they have to find other ways to take care of their families. And sometimes those ways are, you know, by whatever means necessary, which again puts them in the crosshairs of the criminal justice system.
And Beverly, you were just released from prison 3 weeks ago. And putting the show together, we hear oftentimes, actually on the radio, public radio specifically, we hear about prison stories. You hear from prisoners. And then MSNBC has this long-running series called Lockdown. And you kind of get a view into male prisoners. But give us some understanding about what happens in women's prisons. California's women prisons are running at about 160% over capacity. What do you think people need to know about what goes on in a woman's prison?
Well, in a women's facility, which is definitely ran, I've never been to a male facility, but I do know because of the gender difference, it is ran totally different than it would be ran in a male facility. We're overcrowded, for one. There's 8 women per each room. In one prison, it's considered a 2-man cell, so that means there's 2 women to each room. But even so, we're still overcrowded. They're bringing women in by the busload. every day there is a bus that comes to the institution to drop off people that were recently sentenced to prison for whatever length of time it is. In the overcrowdedness, we once had a situation where women were made to sleep in a gym. It was a gymnasium turned into a housing unit. Even that, they were overcrowded. Okay, they had to renovate the gym to try to accommodate the population. We had some bunks that were three-tier, so that meant there was a middle bed. And this becomes a danger and a health risk because there's not enough air circulating. It was during the summer months. People were sweating, passing out because there was not enough air to go around to accommodate the boom of so many people being confined to one area. We've often ran out of food in the process of serving dinner. Okay, certain items they ran out of. And so that means everyone has to wait. Whoever's left eating to eat, they have to wait in order to get a tray because you've ran out of food. You don't have enough to accommodate the population that continues to rise.
When you were in prison, Beverly, you did a lot of writing, especially toward the end of your sentence. What when you thought about life on the outside, you served 12 years.
I served 12 years.
Right. What did you want people to know about your experience? And what were you hoping people would do when they read your articles?
It's my hope that people that make the laws, people that, I'll say Sacramento, because that's where I connect CDC is to Sacramento, the governor, and the legislator. You know, you make the laws and you set up all these guidelines and all these things that you say are going to be done to assist people in once you get incarcerated, then we're going to rehabilitate you. And all of these things are going to be available to help you when, in actuality, if these people who are over CDC, if you actually just took the time to really come in, not on a one-day tour, but come in and reside in these places to actually see what is actually happening on a day-to-day basis to the female that you see in the courtroom, you would definitely do something. You would have to do something about the lies that you've told because you're not doing anything. Yes, there's some school programs. Yes, there's a several drug programs that are located in the institution. But there's a whole lot of drama that goes with a woman being able to access these types of so-called rehabilitative avenues. Okay, it's not as simple as, oh, yeah, the drug program is offered for you. Yes, it's offered. But even that, you have to fit in a certain guideline to get in there. And the drug program is overcrowded.
Beverly, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. If you're just joining us, we're talking about women prisoners, the fastest growing population in prison. What makes women prisoners different from men? When you think of women prisoners, what comes to mind? Do you think that they should be incarcerated maybe in a different way? Do we need to reform sentencing laws to address the rapid increase of women prisoners? 866-798-8255. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco. The time is 20 minutes after 11. Coming up at noon, Bina, Creative Voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco with Karen Armstrong, one of the world's leading commentators on religious affairs. And at 1 o'clock, it's open air. This is Alan Farley. I'll be talking with Vadim Rapin, the violinist who's playing the Sibelius Concerto this week with the San Francisco Symphony, and with song stylist Karen Akers, who is performing her show, Akers Sings Porter, Anything Goes, at the Raz Room. That's open air at 1 o'clock, followed by dispatches from the CBC at 2 o'clock here on your local public radio station, KALW, San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our daily newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll be joined by The Chronicle's David Baker, The Huffington Post's Danielle Ivory, and The Guardian's Martin Chuloff will join us from Baghdad. On Monday, we continue our series Agenda for a New Economy by talking about unemployment. What happens when unemployment runs out? But today, we are talking about the fastest growing population in prisons, and women are the fastest growing population. 11,000 women are incarcerated in California. These are mothers, sisters, daughters, even grandmothers. In fact, it's projected that by 2030, there will be 33,000 women prisoners in California over the age of 55. There are currently 532 women 55 and over in the state's three prisons. So we're talking today about what are the main differences between men and women in prison. If you're a social worker, or if you work with prisoners, what really stands out for you? What do you think we need to know about what women face behind bars? The majority of women in prison, 85%, have been convicted of nonviolent crimes. In fact, today's guest, Beverly Henry, she was sent to prison in 98 for selling a $20 bag of heroin to an undercover cop. And because of previous convictions and the three strikes law, she got 15 years. She served 12 of those years. She was just released 3 weeks ago. So do you think that we need to revisit laws when it comes to talking about women in prison? Do you think women should be incarcerated in a different way? If you work, again, in the justice system or the social services, what do you observe about women prisoners? 866-798-8255. And do you know of anyone? Are you connected to anyone who was on the inside? What was their experience like? And what did that change your opinion about the prison system? 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. In addition to Beverly Henry, we're also joined by Hafsa Al-Amin. She's project coordinator for the California Coalition for Women Prisoners. And Victoria Law is author of the book Resistance Behind Bars, The Struggles of Incarcerated Women. She also edits the zine Tenacious, Writings from Women in Prison. And Victoria, what do women prisoners write about most often? What are their biggest concerns?
Women prisoners write about a variety of issues. For the last issue of Tenacious, one woman wrote a very lengthy piece about her experience with the prison healthcare system. As Beverly can attest, the prison healthcare system is fairly atrocious across the board for both men and women. And there are health issues that aren't, women's health issues that aren't being addressed in prison as well, such as pregnancy or screenings and treatment for breast and cervical cancer, or even simple gynecological services, or the prison's ability or inability to deal with simple or what should be simple female health issues such as menstruation. Mm. So they write about their healthcare issues and
Stick with the healthcare for a minute, because mm-hmm. this is a huge topic. A federal judge in 2006 appointed a receiver to oversee the state's prison healthcare system because they were finding that an average of one inmate a week was dying of neglect or malpractice. Has anything come of that?
I don't know. I would actually shunt that question back to Beverly, who has been...
Beverly, has anything come of that ruling?
Not that I know of, okay? Not that I know of. I tried to stick close to finding out prior to my leaving what actually was going to happen with that. But with most things that come up in prison when it comes to the health care, you get a moment of clarity and everyone's running around trying to get everything done and take care of the women, and then all of a sudden someone drops the ball. Yes, we know someone was appointed, and even the medical providers sent out flyers to the women, the housing units, letting us know that things were going to be ran differently, that prescriptions were going to be done on time, women were going to get the tests that they needed, physicals would be done. Well, that lasted maybe 3 to 6 months, and then all of a sudden the ball got dropped again. And so most people that are in custody, they're accustomed to, yes, everyone is gung-ho for a moment, and then all of a sudden everything gets dropped and we're back to the normal procedure of people getting paperwork getting pushed behind, paperwork being lost, doctor's appointments being canceled. You know, in prison was the only place I ever heard of that one doctor could prescribe a medication, and by the time you got back to the prison, the whole prescription was changed. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And women, they have some very sick women in that place. And they are not being taken care of. Like, society thinks, oh, everything should be fine. No, everything is not fine. You know, women die very often in that prison.
And I understand
they die needlessly.
I understand that you actually watched 17 women die in just 1 year.
I believe it was the year 2005. It was either 4 or 5. In between there, we had 17 deaths in the total of 1 year. 17 deaths. And they were from various things, you know, and they were often ailments that women had complained about for months, for years. You know, I mean, you fill out your copay, which is a procedure that has to be done before you're allowed to see a doctor, even on an emergency. The first thing is asked is not how you feel or what hurts. It's where's the copay, you know, which is a $5 agreement that you're paying to be seen by the doctor. You know, oftentimes these women's copays are overlooked, and in the process, the woman is passing out right in front of you. Who cares about a copay when somebody has an emergency? But those things are important in prison. You know, I mean, it's the craziest thing. You would have to be there to really, a person, that's why I say they need to walk through there and really see how medical staff, what they do and what they don't do. You know, they determine whether or not you're sick enough to see the doctor. The RN, you have to see somebody before you even get to a doctor. Once you see the doctor, yes, he can make the recommendation, but is the institution going to get you out to the doctor in time?
And Hafsa, I wanted to also ask Hafsa about older women. New America Media has an article called Golden Girls Behind Bars. Talking about the 33,000 women who are expected to be in prison by the year 2030 over the age of 55. And the article focuses on a number of women, specifically Helen Lohack, who on January 5th, she died from pneumonia, 84 years old, the oldest a female inmate in California's prison system. The article says she was shackled at her waist and ankles with two guards at her bedside. Hafsa, is this common? Is this how older women prisoners are treated? And is this any different from how older male prisoners are treated?
I can't answer whether or not the older women are treated differently than older men. I can tell you that as a baby boomer, a person who goes in to visit the women in prison, that the number, as you stated, the number of older women is drastically increasing. I mean, very quickly. And as I stated before about the way women are treated on the outside is also reflected inside. Inside the prison, you know, it's legal for them to be treated poorly. Our Constitution says that slavery is illegal in the United States unless you're a prisoner. And so how do you treat slaves? You treat them as though they're less than. I know that younger women who are pregnant or in labor are shackled to beds during pregnancy. So I can imagine, only imagine, that older women are treated even worse because they're elderly. And in this country, we have a history of treating older people as less than.
And we got a call from Edward who couldn't stand the line, but he wanted to say that the increase in the number of women prisoners is a result of the decline in social services. This article also says that inmates over the age of 55 cost taxpayers 2 to 3 times the cost of younger prisoners, who average about $35,000 a year. And they spoke to a woman who's 59 who said that she spent 11 years in prison, spent about $70,000 a year on medications for her chronic lung disease, and now that she's out, she spends about $17,000 a year.
Well, if you can consider that the prison industrial complex, especially here in California, is a cash cow. When you hear about, until recently, when you heard about cuts in the budget, you rarely heard about cuts, you know, to the prison system.
Right.
The money they spend is the money they get. It's huge. So if a person is very ill and there's more money that has to be spent on them for the state, that's more money they can ask the federal government for.
Hmm.
Whole towns have been built around, in fact, Chowchilla may be one of them, built around the prison industrial complex. I spoke with a woman who works at the prison because we also go in and visit. And one of the things that she said to me was that she grew up in that town and that her parents both worked for the prisons as far back as she can remember. So this is a whole family whose subsistence is dependent on, you know, this system. And if anybody knows anything about the Central Valley and Chowchilla and where they're trying to build these prisons, more prisons in the state of California, you'll see that these towns are beginning to burgeon.
And Victoria, if we can go back to our essential question about what makes women prisoners different. I went to Chowchilla to do a story about children taking buses to visit their moms because for so many families, they can't afford the long trip. And so the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, twice a year, they pay for children and their families to go visit their mothers, their sisters, their grandmothers. And when we got to the parking lot, it was completely empty. And one of the women on the bus said, oh, take a look. The men are not here to visit their women. But when you go to a male prison, you've got cars lined up outside the prison before the doors open because the women visit their men.
Yes.
So that's a major difference.
Mm-hmm.
What other differences can you tell us about?
Well, I want to piggyback on that and reiterate that many times when a mother goes to prison, already she's a primary caregiver, which is why there's no, you know, man or family member or partner that goes to visit her. Or if it's a male partner, tends to split and not take care of his children, whereas when a man goes to prison, oftentimes a woman in the family, either his girlfriend or his wife or his mother or his sister, will step up and take care of his children. And again, as Hafsa said, this is a way in which we can see the way our society values women reflected in the way that it also incarcerates its women and treats its women. So in addition to parenting issues, incarcerated women's children are five times more likely to end up in the foster care system than an incarcerated father's children, because again, if she doesn't have someone that she can turn to take care of her children are more likely to end up in foster care. There's also issues of women being more likely to have experienced past physical, emotional, and or sexual abuse prior to coming to prison. And as Beverly has, you know, articulated very well, prison just re-traumatizes people. There's not necessarily any sort of treatment or means for women to process this and get through this. And it's basically like abuse heaped upon more abuse for women.
Beverly, what kind of treatment? And I know that you reached out for help with your addiction, and you said that you didn't get any help at all. Now, give us a sense of what happens in, you know, the last year as you were preparing to leave prison after serving for 12 years. Are you given any help about how to assimilate back into society, how to find a job, that kind of thing?
Oh, let me tell you. What they did do for me is they went online and they processed my request for SSI. They processed that for me. But I had the opportunity because I pushed the issue of I'm going to need some help. I've been locked away 12 years. I have no clue how to use a cell phone. I have no clue how to even cross the street. And I'm going to need some assistance. I'm paroling homeless. There was no facility that I knew of that I could go to. I knew nothing about that, and neither did they. They just gave me some addresses and told me to make some phone calls when I reached the city that I was paroling to, and that I should be able to talk to my parole agent about these things. Well, my parole agent can only do so much. He doesn't know anything about senior housing, you know, and I'm considered a senior citizen. I'm 60 years old.
Mm.
And so I went to an assisted living place about a week ago, and all the addresses and phone numbers, the assistant living list is closed for the next 5 years. So had it not been for a friend who I'm living with now, I would be sleeping in the street. And being HIV positive, a woman of color, recently released from prison, where am I supposed to go and I'm homeless.
And they release prisoners with $200.
I was released with $200, and they've been given that same $200 for the last 30 years.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about women prisoners, the fastest growing prison population in the state, the country, and the world. 11,000 women are currently incarcerated in California. Those numbers are expected to really explode with laws like three strikes. The majority of these women, 85%, have been convicted of nonviolent crimes. And now that you've heard the stories of women prisoners, we're hearing about women over the age of 55 who are dying with their ankles shackled, mothers who can't see their children. Maybe they see them twice a year. Does this change the way you think about prisons? Do you think that women's prisons need to be reformed differently than men's prisons? If you're a social worker and you've worked with prisoners, what are some of the differences that you've seen? We just got an email from Marcia who says the civil grand jury is required by law to inspect the San Francisco jails each year. When I did this, I noticed two things. First, most of the inmates were by law innocent. They had not been convicted and in most cases not even tried for any infraction. Second, while the men's jails were crowded and noisy to the point of craziness, the newest jail was for women, and it was two stories with the guards on the upper floor and glass panels in the floors, so the women had no privacy. This made me physically ill. I left the jail and eventually resigned from the jury. Thank you for that email, Marcia. If you've had any experiences where you've seen differences, give us a call, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Do you think that the mothers of young children should be sentenced differently? What about pregnant women? 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Beverly Henry. She was released from prison just 3 weeks ago. She was sent there in 98 for selling a $20 bag of heroin to an undercover cop. Because of three strikes and previous convictions, she got 15 years. She served 12. We're also joined by Hafsa Al-Amin. She is project coordinator with the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, and Victoria Law, author of the book Resistance Behind Bars, The Struggles of Incarcerated Women. Hafsa, this Marcia's email talking about the fact that women have no privacy in prisons. Can you talk a little bit about that and some other differences just when you go into a male prison and a female prison, what really stands out?
Well, I cannot actually speak to that. I haven't been to any male prisons. I have been in the female prisons, and when I go, we don't go to the cells. Beverly would need to address that. But I can tell you that in the San Francisco County jails, that it's true, these new jails that they've built, they have plexiglass walls so that the guards can keep an eye on these women. These women are always in view. Their bathrooms, their toilets or their latrines, you know, are in their rooms, and you can see everything. I have not seen any curtains or any other means of privacy for these women. And, you know, sometimes they're housed with people that they maybe don't get along with, you know, and so how are they being monitored? How are their activities being monitored in their rooms? And, you know, and what does that look like, and what can that cause to happen? I mean, there's so many different ways for women to be abused inside of prisons. It's unbelievable.
And the majority of the guards are men?
In the prisons, the majority of the guards are men. I don't know. Beverly, can you speak to that?
Oh, yes. The majority of our guard population is definitely male, from the regular CO to the captain to the associate warden. We have a high male population. Men are in our hallways. Yes, we're inside a room, but the room has a glass door. The top of the door is glass. We have a big glass window where he can easily look right through the window. He has to when he counts. Women are in the shower. Different things are going on where the woman is preparing to get dressed. He'll come to the door. Most guards will step right in. Kick the door open and step in, and you're saying, my roommate's in the shower. Well, I'm not looking at your roommate. I'm trying to find so-and-so, you know, but he's standing there and the shower's going. This lady's taking a shower. So why do we have all these male guards working in a women's facility?
Can you give us some examples of interactions between the male guards and the women prisoners?
Well, most of the male guards are definitely rude and obnoxious. Okay, they make little snide remarks. They will have a woman standing there trying to sign up for the phone. He's so busy looking at her cleavage, he can't sign her up for the phone because he's standing there making little gestures and want to crack jokes, want to question her about does she mess around with other women. Oh, they got some rude, very rude staff that work there.
Rude staff and staff that is not properly trained.
And not properly trained.
Not properly
at
trained.
At all.
They many of them have not understood their restrictions. I mean, their personal restrictions. Women are sexually assaulted, groped all the time. I mean, and not just by the prison guards. We're talking medical staff. We've heard many stories of women going to get something looked at because they're having a health issue, maybe an infection. They're catching a cold, or they think they have the flu, or something worse, maybe H. pylori because of the arsenic-contaminated water in the Central Valley that they're drinking. But then they go to see a medical staff person, and instead of getting what they asked for, maybe they'll get a pap smear.
Hmm.
Because
right.
It's convenient for the person, you know, the medical staff person who's checking them. Women are, as I said, on the outside, looked at as less than. So inside the prison system, number one, a woman in prison is looked at, you know, in a lowly type of way because she's a woman. She's maybe a mother, and what are you doing here? You must have done, you know, something so atrocious that you know, your kids are suffering, and you're a woman. You're not supposed to be here. So since you're here, you must be treated as less than, you know, the average person. I mean, how dare you? And they're treated with not only less respect, but women typically were a little more low-key. We're a little more vulnerable. We, you know, experienced lots of different trauma in our lives before. In fact, they say the stats show that something like 85 to 90% of women who are in prisons have experienced sexual abuse or domestic violence or some other type of assault before they come.
Right.
So when they get there, what's changed? They can't speak up. They can't speak out. All their rights are taken away. They're not expected to be respected, and they're not.
And what?
Let me mention.
Sure, Beverly.
Go along with what she was saying, they're not above calling you a whore. You're looked at as you were a whore. That you'll sleep around. What's wrong with you? What kind of disease you got? I mean, this is not the way that you address people, anyone. And guards are, they'll say that to you in a minute. They call you a bunch of bitches. They say, all you cows, get ready. It's time to go eat. Mm-hmm. I mean, women are treated. They're treated very poorly inside, behind those walls. They're treated very poorly. And most of these women are abused women from the start.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just imagine if the abuse was outside and then I come to prison, and then I got to be abused by the staff who I have to rely on to make sure I get my phone signed up, make sure my door gets open, make sure I get a pass to go here. It's like the woman is constantly begging for you to do something that you took an oath to do.
Hmm. And Beverly, is there anyone to turn to when these things happen? Is there any way
exactly.
to report abuse?
Oh, well, they'll tell you in a minute. Well, if you don't like what I said, I mean, there's the phone number over the phone where they have us call this hotline about reporting staff when they're disrespectful and sexual harassment and discrimination. They have this nice poster where they say, you know, you can call this hotline. Well, yeah, you can call that hotline, but guess what? There's going to be some retaliation once you call that hotline.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you may find yourself moved to another whole other area of the prison. You may find yourself in lockup. So there's a possible punishment. And most women who are fearful of these things happening to them, because I've told a group of women, just report it. Report it. Write it down. Please report it. Don't let him get away with this. Well, I would rather not say anything because then it's going to cause problems. And that comes from their fear and the intimidation of losing a privilege, you know, of being moved away from, let's say they're in there with their sister, mm-hmm. being moved away from their sister, you know, their loved one that they've been living in the room with. Or some, you have mothers and daughters in there. One girl told me, well, I would report him because he had been harassing her. Every evening he came to work, he would harass this one girl because he liked her. You know, he had a thing for her, and she didn't want nothing to do with him, but she was afraid he'd move her away from her grandmother. And eventually he did. He goes, okay, I'll fix you. He separated them. Mm. Now, why would you do that? You know, her and her grandmother both have a life sentence. You know, and that's the only contact she has with family, and they're in custody together. But because she didn't want to play with this cop, she had to suffer the consequence of being moved away from her grandmother. You know, I eventually 602'd it for her and helped her get back to the unit, but still, why did she have to be intimidated like that?
And Beverly, I want to give out the phone number because we have about 10 minutes left. So if you'd like to join us, now would be a good time to call. And frankly, it's very rare to hear from women prisoners, to hear what they go through behind on the inside. And Beverly Henry was just released 3 weeks ago. She served 12 years for selling a $20 bag of heroin to an undercover cop. Because of the three strikes law, she actually got 15 years. She served 85% of her term. So if you have any questions for Beverly or...
Please call me. They can call me. They can call me anytime.
Well, and now is a good time to call because we have just under 10 minutes left at 866-798-8255. And when you hear stories about women prisoners, from brand new mothers to women over 55, the oldest prisoner in California, 84-year-old Helen Lohek, died from pneumonia just this past January in Chowchilla. She was shackled at her waist and ankles with two guards at her bedside. And if we continue down this path, it's estimated that 33,000 women over the age of 55 will be in prison by the year 2030. Many of these women can't even get into the second bunk because they've got arthritis or their knees are out or they've got, you know, issues where they can barely walk. So does this change the way you think about prisons? Do you think they need to be reformed? Women's prisons need to be reformed differently than men's prisons? 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Edward in Oakland. Hi, Edward. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I think prisons definitely need to be reformed. I mean, how many judges have told California to clean up its act, and they keep resisting? I mean, it's ridiculous. But I think overall, I think there needs to be a greater cognizance of the overall effect on California society and the society of the country by cycling people in and out of a system which stigmatizes them for the rest of their lives. And many of these people are in there because acts that committed in order to survive, not to make it, not to get rich, but to simply survive. And that's where the inadequate safety net comes into play. So we need to fix the prisons. We need to fix the safety net. And we need to be more cognizant of the huge second-class citizen tier that we are creating in this country and in this state. That, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, the argument that I would use is that the net result of putting all these people in prison and not allowing them to be true citizens for the rest of their lives, you know, suffering discrimination in terms of jobs and housing and all sorts of things, that the net result of that is so negative that it outweighs the deterrent value of putting them in prison in the first place, not to mention the huge prison industrial complex that we're feeding.
Right, because California's number one in prison spending and number 48 in education. And you bring up a lot of good points, Edward. And Beverly, I'm wondering, Hafsa made an interesting point earlier saying that the guards say you're a woman, you're a woman, you're not supposed to be in prison. And now that you're out, how are you being treated when you try to find a job, when you try to find housing, when you share your story?
Believe it or not, my parole agent has been wonderful. He's been very, very respectful toward me. He's been helpful.
But going into these places and inquiring and asking questions, because I just tell them, you know what, I've been in custody, and what I'm going to ask you may sound dumb to you, but I don't know, because I haven't been out here, and could you explain this to me? Mm. I find people are, they're not very receptive. They're not very receptive at all. You know, it really hurt my feelings at Social Security, because my money, my claim was approved, okay? I had not one penny, and the lady told me that nothing had come up. So she basically lied to me because she didn't want to do her job and type my name in. You know, and just yesterday I went back in the office only to find out that my claim had been approved over almost a month now. Mm. You know, I could have used that money to help myself. So instead, I got to wait for the check to come in the mail. They claimed they didn't know if I was out of custody or not. Mm. You know, and that really sort of depressed me, you know, because here I'm out in society and this is a Social Security office. Why wouldn't you want to help me?
Mm. Well, thank you.
I find a lot of resistance, and I just keep pushing on, though. I'm not going to let it cause me to give up and just say I don't care, because I refuse to go back in that system and be warehoused.
Well, and the thing also, Beverly, because of three strikes, if you're even caught for petty theft, you could go back for life, right?
I will die in prison. I'm homeless right now. I stay with a friend. But I would rather sleep here than to go back to prison, because I will never get out. I will die, you know, and I would give anything to have the money to be able to move into a place. But right now I have to wait and see if I can find something affordable, because Section 8 is closed. They told me yesterday for the next 5 years. I can't sign up for that. So what is available for me? What housing can I get? And all I really need is a single apartment.
And all of this contributes to the high rates of recidivism that we see.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
We're talking about
exactly.
the CDCR rehabilitation. With these recent budget cuts, most of the vocational programs have been cut. The ones that haven't been cut mostly serve the male prisons and male populations, and some administrative jobs that help to serve the needs of the prison administration. But there is no rehabilitation. So like Edward was saying, you know, we're cycling these people in and out. Well, when they come out, how is that going to affect our communities? And it affects everyone. We're not all going to be here 50 years from now, you know? And
so
how is that going to affect just the progress of our society as a whole?
Right. Well, and so many children are being raised by their grandmothers, or in some cases their great-grandmothers, because so many women are in prison. Well, we've got a number of callers, so let's go through a few, and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy. Welcome
Hi.
To the show.
Listening to this just makes one want to weep. This society has so little regard for our the most unfortunate. I mean, you know, we spend no money on education. And although money is spent on prisons, it's certainly not spent on the prisoners. And people are so blasé about this. They just think, put them away forever. I just don't know. It feels like we're back in the, you know, the 1600s or something. The way things happen. And I was wondering, would it help women prisoners if there were women guards instead of male guards? I don't know if that would be any better. I think it's, you know, the caliber of people who want to become prison guards is so susceptible, as far as I'm concerned. I think that, you know, people who want to become prison guards, they have some diabolical or really wanting to, you know, control people. And
well, Nancy, thanks for the call. Sorry to cut you off, but we're almost out of time, and I just want to get a few more callers in. Let's hear from Kay in Monterey. I'm sorry, we lost Kay. Do you want to briefly address that, Hafsa? Would it be better with women guards?
I couldn't answer that either. I would let Beverly answer that in the recent.
I think it would. Well, first of all, it's really not about who wants to be the prison guard. But if you're going to be a prison guard, then do your job to the letter. Don't get the job because you want to control
another human being.
Were you treated differently?
Don't get the job because you want to mistreat.
Were you treated differently by women guards?
Well, yes, women guards do treat us different. You know, you have some that, I mean, they really have compassion. Mm. They have respect. They really are there to help. Okay, you have a select few that really took that job because they want to help and they want to make some changes. They don't want to control you. They don't want to disrespect you and mistreat you. So whoever takes the job, don't take it because you have a bad time at home and you want a place to let out your frustrations.
All right, and I want to take one last caller, Peggy in Los Altos. Beverly, she had a message for you. Let's hear from Peggy.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Peggy.
Yeah, hi. How are you guys doing? This is a great program. Beverly, I'm really proud of you. I mean, it was heartbreaking to hear a lot of stories. I hope things change. Things need to be on news at, you know, a national level all over the place. This has and requires awareness from all of us that you're just a light out there, and just God bless you. That's all.
Well, thank you for calling,
Peggy.
And Beverly, we're almost out of time. We've got about 20 seconds. You're now out of prison. You're going to continue your writing. The California Coalition for Women Prisoners have also done a number of protests and actions to change things. What can people do?
Well, I believe that people can, especially those that have people in custody, you can start getting in touch with those, with your loved ones, and find out what's going on in there to them. Find out what you can do to assist them from the outside to help make some changes in the prison. See, it takes people calling in and putting pressure on the warden, putting pressure on the governor. Make some changes inside that prison. Talk to the chief medical officer about your loved one's health condition.
And Beverly,
never stop calling and making them know that someone outside knows that you're not doing your job.
And Beverly, we're going to have to leave it there. Beverly is with the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, was just released from prison 3 weeks ago. Hafsa Al-Amin is also with the coalition, and Victoria Law is author of Resistance Behind Bars. Thank you all for joining us. And thanks for listening. I'll be right back to let you know what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the increasing violence in Iraq, the House and Senate health care bills, and the future of newspapers. We'll be joined by the San Francisco Chronicle's David Baker, the Huffington Post's Danielle Ivory, and the Guardian's Martin Chuloff joins us from Baghdad. Join us live at 11 a.m. or email the story that stood out for you this week at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Where did you see the best reporting? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call, the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows, visit yourcallradio.org. You can also find links there to the Your Call blog and podcast. Malihe Razazan is producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Pete Misick is our web editor. Phil Hartman is the chief engineer, and Alan Farley is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Alan Farley, and on the next Open Air, I'll be talking with song stylist Karen Akers, who's performing her show Akers Sings Porter, Anything Goes, at the Raz Room in San Francisco, and with violinist Vadim Rapine, who's playing the Sibelius Violin Concerto this week with the San Francisco Symphony. That's Vadim Rapine and Karen Akers on the next Open Air, only on KALW. And that's coming up at 1 o'clock, an hour from now, on your local public radio station, KALW San Francisco.